Welcome to Beneath the Surface, a podcast brought to you by the BC Mining Law Reform Network. My name is Umair Mohammed. My guest today is Francesca Fionda. Francesca is a reporter with the Narwhal, where she covers mining. She's the lead author of a recent investigation titled British Columbia's Multi-Million Dollar Mining Problem. The investigation, which is a result of a collaboration between the Narwhal and the Globe and Mail, looked into the cost of cleaning up mine pollution in BC. It found a significant funding shortfall in the money that's supposed to be set aside for reclamation. Among other things, this raises questions about the future financial burdens taxpayers might face. We'll include a link to the investigation in the show notes. It's well worth reading through, so be sure to have a look. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Francesca.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So you've done this investigation into the cost of mining pollution in BC. I thought I'd start by asking you to talk about the collaborative nature of the investigation. So it involved the Narwhal as well as the Globe and Mail working together. And that's not something, you know, I see happen very often. So how did this collaboration come to take place?
Well, at the Narwhal, we've been covering mining for years, and something that I've always wanted to learn a little bit more about as BC continues to explore for critical minerals is what plans are in place to ensure that, you know, we're thinking about the cleanup and the cleanup costs. And kind of what started the investigation a little bit is some of the data that's published in the BC Chief Inspector of Mines annual report, and it provides financial data. So I was taking a look at that about a year ago. We started digging into those numbers because they can kind of start to answer that question. And we wanted to partner with another newsroom that has a track record of delivering big data-driven investigations and has produced some great data stories in the past. And so we connected with the team at the Globe and Mail, and we worked with reporters Jeffrey Jones and Chen Wang to find out if enough is being done to ensure the public is protected if mining companies can't or won't pay for the cleanup. And so the result, as you mentioned, is our first collaboration with the Globe and Mail. And it was really great to work with Jeff and Chen as we all brought different experiences to the table. Jeff is an experienced journalist, and he's focused on sustainable finance and ESG issues. And Chen is a data journalist at the Globe. And actually, Jeff and Chen have worked on an investigation into inactive oil and gas wells in Western Canada. So a lot of similar themes to our investigation. And myself, working on the mining beat for the Narwhal, I've spoken with so many people involved in this massive industry. And, you know, many of them say we need certain minerals if we want a greener future, fueled by batteries and solar panels. And while they might disagree on how we get them or how much we need or the different ways that we kind of address this idea of critical minerals, one shared concern is, you know, how do we avoid the mistakes of the past? So together we teamed up, and the resulting collaboration is you can read it on the Narwhal's website and the Globe and Mail's website as well.
So the Chief Inspector of Mines annual report, it's a lot of numbers, numbers that have to do with bonds.
Mm-hmm.
That's what your story deals with as well. Not the kind of social bonds that we usually think of when we think of bonding.
Right.
It can get quite technical. And so maybe we could start with that. So could you sort of explain the concept of bonding in the context of mining? And, you know, how does it work to ensure that companies are held accountable for cleanup and restoration costs?
A mine project has to plan for cleaning up their site after production ends, but exactly how much it might cost to do that, when they have to pay, and in what form that payment has to be, it differs depending on the government's policies. So that's what we were looking at. And in BC, companies have to give a financial security to cover some of the cost of reclaiming a site. So it's like it's an IOU essentially, but in BC, that IOU, that financial security, can be in various forms. So it could be in cash, it can be letters of credit, it can be surety bonds. It can also be in other forms like, guaranteed investment certificates. So there's lots of different ways that a mining company can tell the government that, you know, here's an assurance that we are going to put aside enough money to clean up this site. And in some cases, mineral reserves can also count towards a financial security, but we can talk about that a little bit later. But essentially, the government holds this security until the mine is restored to what they would describe as a safe and environmentally sound site. So that's essentially what we were looking at, the policies behind making sure that the government is collecting enough money to cover the future cleanup costs of mines.
Right. And you found that perhaps they aren't collecting enough money and that there happens to be a fair bit of underfunding in that system.
So, yeah, it's a tricky question to answer about how underfunded or because it really depends on who you ask. If you ask mining reform advocates and environmentalists, as well as the many policy researchers that we spoke to, they would say that underfunding is a huge problem across BC, as well as in many other jurisdictions. But the root of that underfunding, they would say, is from underestimating the true costs of cleaning up these sites. And in BC, they're working on adjusting how that happens. But right now, how it generally works is that the company uses some the standard practices shared by the government. There's actually like an online Excel spreadsheet that you can go and see how it might be calculated. Again, they're updating that, but that's the information that's available now. Essentially, a company will come up with an estimate for how much it should cost to clean up the site over the next 5 years of work that they're going to be doing on that site. And then they submit that to the government. The government generally adds a 15% kind of contingency on top of that. And so the estimate comes from that. But a lot of people that we spoke with say that those estimates are severely underestimated. So that's one of the reasons why the liabilities are underfunded. And there are some pretty dramatic examples of what can happen when those costs are not estimated correctly. So, you know, historically, it's been a much bigger problem. And then when that happens in the past, it can be really hard to play catch up. And for example, one of the sites that we looked at in our investigation is the Tulsa Kachief mine, which is close to the BC-Alaska border. And, you know, that stopped producing in the 50s and has been leaking acid mine drainage into the Tulsa River for decades. And the cleanup now is estimated at about $72 million, but the BC government has less than 1% of that in hand. So that's where kind of that risk to the public comes in, is that who's going to pay when companies go bankrupt or they can't afford to pay? And so to your question about, you know, how big is this issue of underfunding mine cleanup, people working in mining and the government will point out that there have been significant improvements in closing the gap between the estimated cleanup costs and what the government has collected in security. So over the last few years, that gap has closed. In 2016, the Auditor General released a report warning that, you know, this was a huge liability. And since then, the government has worked towards closing that gap. And one of the things that we looked at was this a new interim policy that is meant to help address this problem. It's an interim policy, so it's not hasn't been made into the official policy or into regulations. Many people are calling for that to happen, but there has been movement towards addressing this problem.
What you're really saying is that, you know, there's that gap between the estimated cleanup cost and how much, you know, money the companies have given, which I don't really understand. So if, you know, if there's a requirement for companies to pony up, why doesn't the government do something and actually force them to give this money?
Yeah, good question. Sorry, you have an and then? Did you have one?
Well, and then there's the other issue, right? The fact that the real problem may be that the estimated cleanup costs are too low. So even if that gap completely closes, like that won't solve the problem entirely.
That's definitely what some people have told us. And that's why, you know, that question of like how widespread is the underfunding is kind of hard to answer, because some people would say right now, even if the government collected all the money that is estimated to clean up all these sites, that would still be underfunded because the actual cost of cleanup is much higher. That's what some of the folks that we spoke to would say. In terms of ensuring that companies pay for what the current estimate is, we did ask the government about that in terms of, you know, have there ever been any financial penalties or what kinds of enforcement actions have you taken to, you know, address any companies that are maybe behind on their cleanup, on their payments. And they told us that they, you know, that they work with companies to ensure that there is a payment plan in place, but they have five mines that are currently facing possible penalties for falling behind on their reclamation securities. They wouldn't tell us which mines, and they told us that there hasn't been a final decision made on that. But this new interim policy was recently in place. And before that, mines were not, there wasn't a huge push to make sure that mines paid these reclamation securities. Now there is a regulation that makes it a lot clearer that mines are expected to pay. New mines and mines with less than 5 years of estimated reserves or estimated mine life are also expected to fully pay the cost of cleanup. So they introduced that, and those kinds of policies are meant, are, I think right now they're just kind of playing catch up to meet what the new interim policy is requiring from mine sites.
Right. And mind you, this is hundreds of millions of dollars we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So that, like, the currently the estimated total liability, according to the last financial year, which is the most recent data that we have, estimates that the total liability of cleaning up major mines in BC is $4.1 billion. So that's the estimate for how much it would, if we had to, I guess, clean up all the major mines in BC right now. And as of last report, the BC government had collected $3.7 billion of that. So it describes that as a shortfall of $400 million. But one of the things that we looked at, just to make it a bit clearer what how this liability is calculated and how the security is calculated, there are some sites that have provided a little bit more or overpaid what their estimated liability is. And that might be because a mine might be planning an expansion, or, you know, these are all estimates, right? So if a company wants to provide greater financial security, they can do that. But that doesn't mean that kind of extra financial security that they've put down could go to another site that might be severely underfunded. So if we take out those overpayments, the difference was closer to $753 million. So that's the gap that the government is trying to close right now. And again, as you mentioned, some people told us that even if that $753 million is closed, there's still the question of, is that even enough? So those are the kinds of things that people in the industry are wondering about.
And, you know, I'm wondering, like, why, if I have, you know, if I'm behind on my taxes by, say, $753, why I get threatening letters. But the mining industry just gets to keep on, they just keep taking stuff out of the ground. It's okay. They got a payment plan in place, I guess. So,
well, one of the things that I heard that people would like to see more of is more clear incentives for ongoing reclamation, so that it isn't something that is just done when the project is done, but as the mine develops, as it grows, things are done on site to think about cleaning up as you go. And even in the earlier stage of design and thinking about the, just at the very beginning stages of a mine, in terms of designing for things that could control or reduce pollution. So more incentives towards that is something that I heard from folks.
Right. And then how does BC compare to other jurisdictions, whether other provinces in Canada or other countries around the world?
There are some things that BC is improving on, some things that, you know, that BC does better, and there's some things that they're behind on. And the first thing I'll say is that, you know, we wouldn't have been able to do this investigation if BC didn't actually publish this financial data and make it public. So it's great that we can get this kind of information. Not all jurisdictions provide this info. And so the info we were able to get was, it's like a list of all the mine sites, the estimated cleanup cost, and how much that site has put aside in terms of their financial security. Ideally, we'd want this data to be updated a lot more frequently than every fiscal year in terms of what's shared with the public, and then sharing it as soon as it's available rather than just the end of the calendar year, which is the chief inspector report. And, you know, the mining industry told us that it is a big supporter of the government policy, and they see it as more stringent, and that it could encourage more long-term stewardship. So meaning that, as I described, you know, there's more incentives for ongoing reclamation. One company said that the interim policy does a good job of ensuring that a mine is fully bonded during the riskiest parts of its life. So, you know, the first 5 years and the last 5 years. But where the policy is falling short, we heard that there should be more clear incentives for ongoing reclamation and better designs to reduce pollution, as well as better estimates upfront for what the actual cost or the true cost of cleanup is. And the other concern was that the provincial government has what they call an exploration incentive, and it allows mineral reserves in the ground to be counted towards the security in some specific cases. And the concern we heard from economists and policy researchers is that if you're counting minerals in the ground, it's not as secure because the value of those minerals changes. And in Quebec, for example, they require only what are known as hard financial securities, and those are less likely to fluctuate in value.
And then, you know, I was rereading your story just before talking to you, and I was thinking, you know, we talk a lot about money and reclamation, but of course, part of the issue here is that, like, you can't really reclaim the environment as it used to be, right? Like, is there any discussion about the fact that these are ecosystems that are forever altered? There's no going back. And all we're doing by coming up with estimates of the amount of money that will be necessary for reclamation is sort of papering over that fact.
Yeah, one of the stories that I would love to do and keep looking into is reclamation specifically. Like, what are the requirements for reclamation? And, you know, sometimes you hear the term remediation, which is different than reclamation. Reclamation is a lot more intensive and like you said, kind of returning the area to an environmentally sound and safe space. And I think that one of the questions that has been asked a lot is, like, what exactly does it mean to fully reclaim a site? So the Britannia mine, as an example, is a historical mine that will require water treatment for what they say forever. So it is going to cost taxpayers $3 million a year in maintenance costs. And previously there were more mines that had this risk of needing cleanup in perpetuity. So needing to have a water treatment site, water treatment facility on site, possibly forever. And those costs, like, how do you calculate the cost of cleaning up something forever? I don't know how you do that.
Right.
And people ask that question a lot. And so there are folks who are trying to untangle the idea of like, how do you accurately estimate the cost of cleaning up some sites that will require this for decades, for over 100 years? Yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah. Forever is a long time.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know if any of these companies are going to be around 500 years from now. We don't know if the province of BC is going to be around 500 years from now. But, you know, this is what we're leaving to future generations. So.
Mm-hmm. And we can see, like, the Tulsica Chief Mine was an example that we focused on in the story, because it is something that was, you know, still, it's still to this day polluting, and it's been decades. And so if we don't plan for the future, it's possible that, you know, future Tulsica Chief mines could exist, and we don't know it yet.
Right. And one of the things that you mentioned briefly in your report is the absence of an industry-funded pool for mine cleanup in BC. And would you be able to talk a little bit about that? And, like, what would an industry-funded pool of that sort entail?
Mm-hmm. So you're right. Right now, there's no industry-funded pool specifically for mines, the mining industry in BC. And I know this is something that BC MLR has pushed for in the past, is that, you know, it's shared that this new policy still, the new interim policy in BC still doesn't address things like unexpected catastrophic events or bankruptcy. And, you know, this was a concern that I heard from folks working in policy research, that today, you know, with increasing climate risks and extreme floods and droughts and wildfires, that this is something that needs to be addressed. And, you know, in BC, we can look at some historical examples of, you know, the companies that went bankrupt and left a huge bill to pay. And there was no backup, no fund, no industry funded pool. So the idea would be that perhaps there could be a levy or something that the industry pays into, and that pool could be accessed in the event of a catastrophic event, major failure, or bankruptcy of a company. But essentially, the idea is that this would help protect taxpayers in that event, rather than it falling to the taxpayers to pay for something that the mining company was unable to. It's something that is planned for ahead of time. And right now, the BC government is reviewing its bonding strategy for, a wide range of industry projects. And that could be something that they look at in phase two of reviewing their public interest bonding strategy. And that's something over the next year, the government plans to look at financial assurance mechanisms for unplanned events like disasters. But we didn't get any specific assurances from the government that if they're looking at it specifically for mining, just that it is something that they're looking at overall.
And I loved your investigation. I loved reading through it. But, my favorite thing in it were the visualizations. Because, as I mentioned, I've also looked at those reports, the Chief Inspector of Mines reports. And just looking through them in the tables, it's not a fun exercise. But reading through your investigation and looking at the way that you visualize that data is actually, if not fun, it's actually quite engaging and interesting. Could you talk a little bit about the process of figuring out how to organize that data and, how to present it in a visually appealing way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as you mentioned, most of our data came from the annual Chief Inspector of Mines report. And so that's published at the end of every year. And we were able to go back to 2014, because that's as far back as when the reclamation securities and liabilities were both published. And the other things that we looked at beyond those reports were company records and annual reports to get a better idea of which companies we were looking at. Since some of the companies, as you might have noticed in the table, maybe they use a numbered company name, or they might have multiple subsidiaries, and it looks like it's three different companies when in fact it's actually one, major company. And so I worked with Chen Wang, who did a lot of the thinking on ways to present some of our main findings. And so Chen at the Globe and Mail is a data journalist there. And one of the things that we wanted to show was how the situation has changed over time, and as well as which mines had not provided their full security. So we focused on kind of those questions and how can we make it, obvious in terms of what are some of the trends that we found when we looked at the data. And so you can see, looking at the estimated liability and security over time for overall all the mines has definitely continued to grow. And when you look at, one of the biggest liabilities or the estimated liabilities is Teck's coal mines in the Elk Valley. We wanted to focus on that because it is the single biggest liability on the list, and just to show that it has continued to grow as well since 2014 in terms of the estimated cost of cleaning up this site. And then the other things we wanted to be able to show is is it possible to get a snapshot of how all the mines are doing when it comes to providing a financial security? And so we were able to kind of spread out the mines that haven't provided their full security to kind of show you which mines are kind of, below 40% or 20% of the level that they might expected to be at. And so, yeah, this is a snapshot of the data as of last financial year. And so hopefully, when we get new data, we'll be able to kind of compare and see how things have improved.
And is there any specific piece of data that you were surprised by? Was there anything that, you perhaps didn't expect to see?
I think one of the surprising things, I think, to me was the kind of the overall context of what we're looking at. So, when we look at how BC has had, record high mining and exploration investment, and that many of these companies bring in revenues in the millions or billions of dollars. And when you kind of look at all the money that's going into that end of things, what was surprising to me is the discrepancy between record profits and, delaying or not providing the full security to the province, when often the amount owed is a fraction of some of the revenues that some companies are bringing in. And obviously that's not the case for all companies, but in terms of just, yeah, looking at the individual mines and seeing that it doesn't seem like they're that far away from maybe fully bonding their site and having revenues that are maybe, you know, in the millions or billions of dollars.
Yes, somehow it makes accounting sense, right?
It helps, to graph it all out and see that kind of, that kind of information, because then it helps us compare. And, obviously there are some companies that are much bigger than other ones. And so it would be interesting to learn more about what's happening at each of those sites and learn more individually about, you know, what kind of ongoing reclamation is happening there. So hopefully that's something that we can keep looking at.
I do have a last question for you about what else you're sort of interested in following up on in this specific investigation, and then perhaps other related topics.
Yeah, I mean, we're always looking to hear from folks that are involved in any of these issues that we were discussing today. So if people are interested in reaching out, we're always ready to listen. In terms of kind of some of the questions that I'd love to dig into is just a bit more about reclamation. And like you brought up this question at the beginning, like what exactly is reclamation? How does it work? When is a mine considered fully reclaimed? That would be something really interesting to look into more. And I'd love to hear more about solutions to water treatment issues. And I know that's a big issue for a lot of the sites that we looked at is a big cost is water treatment. So hearing solutions from folks about what they're doing on the ground, it would be great to learn more about that.
Okay. So how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can email me at francesca@thenarwhal.ca. And would love to hear from folks, especially about solutions and things that are being done to address some of the issues that we talked about today.
And people can follow you on Twitter?
You can. I'm not on there that often.
Okay. Yeah, we're all trying our best not to be.
I am on there, and but it might take a while to respond. But yeah.
Okay. Well, we can share your handle in the description for the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that would be great.
All right. Thanks so much, Francesca. This was great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Francesca, for shedding light on such a critical issue. To our listeners, we hope this episode has provided you with a better understanding of the financial challenges posed by mining reclamation in British Columbia. It's clear that proactive measures and transparent policies are essential for safeguarding our environment and preventing future taxpayer burdens. Remember to look at the show notes for a link to the full report and for a link to our website, where you can learn more about BC mining law reform. Join us next time on Beneath the Surface as we continue to explore the impacts of mining in British Columbia. We'll see you then.